We are, on every scale, surrounded and formed by light. It shapes every experience of being in the world. It reaches into all but the darkest corners of our imaginations. So writes Veronica Strang in the study From the Lighthouse. She suggests, in fact, that humankind can be seen as a light signaling species which has developed myriad languages of light. We're about to meet an artist who is known as a painter of light, as someone who has immersed himself in landscapes here in his own backyard and across the seas to study sunlight and shadow and clouds and rivers and seas, but not just on sight, but developing his own sight as well by sitting with the masters, painters in a long tradition of rendering light on canvas. It's fascinating now to imagine Brian Keeler, after all these years, out along the seacoast, standing where artists before him have stood, and coming to terms for the first time on canvas with a classic maritime scene, the lighthouse along the shore. Veronica Strang reminds us, echoing the tiny flash of the firefly, the lighthouse sends encoded light messages out in the dark. Its searching beam extends the capacities of the human eye and the human mind, and while, at a vastly larger scale, the shining beam represents the sun itself. On some level, Brian Keeler's elemental explorations open our eyes to what's around us, and his searching mind enriches his level of experience through music, dance, and literature too, and somehow expands the language of light he's been developing over the decades. And that means when he travels to Ireland to paint, as he's done recently, and places those paintings in conversation with his coastal canvases of Maine, will have a rich and dramatic experience. In fact, he calls the show that opens tomorrow at the Laura Craig Galleries in Scranton, Atlantic Arias, Coastal Connections, Ireland and Maine. He writes, "The word aria means air or atmosphere, which is the context I am using here, but he also intends the echoes of aria as a musical term, as in Mozart's operas. Keeler's works are constructed of rhythms with melodic and harmonic aspects as well. Brian Keeler has deep roots in Wyalusing, and he now lives in Ithaca, New York, and he's the author of the study Dramatic Color in the Landscape and the Art of William Keeler, Pennsylvania Regionalist Painter. Brian Keeler paid a visit to the WVIA studios to talk about Atlantic arias.
I've been going to Maine for many years, and we just went up in October and had a nice trip, and it turns out that I was painting some lighthouses. I've never painted lighthouses before. They're, in a certain way, they're almost too stereotypical or something, sort of like a covered bridge. You know, they're wonderful, but at the same time, everybody's done them, but at the same time, they're like these icons of Americana and also of Ireland, too. So I was painting lighthouses, and the first one I did was called Pemaquid Point. It's in Maine on the way up, and Edward Hopper, I think, did a painting of it in the 40s sometime. So, you know, I love to go to these same places that other historical artists have gone to, like Monhegan Island. I've been there several times, and many painters have gone there too. So it's kind of a thrill to sit in the same places that historical artists. When I've been in Italy, it turns out that I was in the same spots that John Singer Sargent had painted. And I didn't know it at the time when I got back. And I found this painting that Sargent did from a church called San Roque. And I was, I'm sitting right in the same spot, but looking sort of the way that Sargent was sitting. So this was a neat thing about Maine and Ireland too. So that was sort of the genesis of it. And then the title of it, Atlantic Arias, I like the alliteration, and it seemed to fit. And like I said in the essay, I'm borrowing a kind of a musical term there. I guess most people think of arias in operatic terms, but I like to make these sort of associations and corollaries between painting and music, the rhythms. I think a lot about the relationships and the intervals, and so there's sort of musical corollaries there, and I like to do that.
When did you go to Ireland?
Yeah, we just went there the last 2 weeks of October, so it was fairly recently. Enjoyment for me is to just be out there, and it's just a great way to travel. I was recently listening to Rick Steves, and he was interviewing another travel person, and retired people go to places, and they just kind of rush through. And what he was advocating for them was to sit down and draw, no matter if you have any drawing ability or not, just to sit there and draw. And what it does is it forces you to just appreciate it and stay someplace for, you know, a half hour or an hour to look at the place. And so I was thinking, well, I'm doing the right thing already. And that's what I like about going to museums. I talked about in the blog that I go to museums whenever I travel. And the National Gallery of Ireland in Dublin is really a world-class museum. And I discovered this Caravaggio there that I hadn't seen before. That's been part of my motivation for going to Italy is looking for all the Caravaggios, and I've seen most of them in Rome and other places in Italy and in the United States, too. So I discovered this major piece, and it was only discovered like in around 1995 or 2000, and it was in a Jesuit house in Dublin. It had been there, you know, for 400 years, and it was a major painting. It was called The Finding of Christ. It was when Judas kisses Christ, and he's revealed to the Roman soldiers, and it's just an incredible piece. So I just sat there and drew from it, and during that process, I'm discovering things that, you know, you don't get on a cursory glance. And there's some statistic that says that people, when they go to a museum, they usually just spend like between 3 to 5 seconds, because we're always in a hurry and you want to get through the whole thing. Like you're in the Metropolitan Museum, it's got 3,000 paintings. And so if you sit down to draw and sketch, you start seeing things that you wouldn't in that kind of hurried pace.
What are the kinds of things that draw you so to travel to see Caravaggio?
Yeah, well, he's known for his light too, but it's a different type of light. I'm usually painting landscapes, but he has this very dramatic light. In fact, he's sort of the inventor of it. We think of Rembrandt as a painter of light too, but Caravaggio was really the person that started it all off and sort of separated himself from the Renaissance. We think of Raphael, it's very kind of soft and nuanced color. Then Caravaggio took like dramatic, like a spotlight, and has this very contrasty light and dark, a very dramatic lighting. I had a teacher in art school, Virgil Sova, that said he wasn't really a fan of Caravaggio and Rembrandt, because he said, you know, the halftone gets lost, the in-between tone places, because it's almost black and white, but it also adds to the drama of it. And in this particular room in the National Gallery in Ireland, they had another painter, Gerrit von Hahnhorst, and we saw a retrospective of his at the Uffizi several years ago. He's almost more of a favorite of mine than he's more of a Caravaggio than Caravaggio is, if that's possible, because his work has more luminosity. He doesn't go quite for the black and white. He has these wonderful golden glowy things, but you can tell he's Caravaggisti, as they say, of the school of Caravaggio. So that's what's nice about museums. They usually have the rooms kind of thematically arranged.
And I think while we're talking about the tradition, Brian, one of the things that you also bring to our attention is that you found some Irish painters who were intriguing. Speaking of Yeats, Jack B., right?
Right, that's right, yeah. Jack B. and his father, John Yeats, was the father of William Butler Yeats, and then William Butler Yeats's brother, Jack B. Yeats. It gets a little confusing there, but they had a sizable collection of their works in the gallery in Dublin.
And also on these shores, you learned about a tie between Rockwell Kent and Ireland.
Exactly, yeah, that was surprising. I didn't know about that till I was at a pub in Ireland, or I think we saw some literature too, but these musicians in the pub told me about that. So, you know, I knew of Rockwell Kent from Maine, and I loved his work, and I've seen his illustrations, but I didn't know that he had a connection to Ireland too, so I began reading about him there, and he had this leftist policy. You know, it was very much in line with other painters at the time, like Grant Wood. They just had a retrospective of his work at the Whitney, and they talk about that. And Thomas Hart Benton too. They were very outspoken in their political beliefs too. So Rockwell Kent was the same. So it was a thrill to In fact, this one on the cover here, I just saw a painting that Rockwell Kent had done at the same spot. It's called Glen Column Kill, and it's the painting that's on the cover of the postcard for the show at Laura Craig Gallery. So it's another one of those serendipitous or synchronistic incidences where Rockwell Kent was at the same spot that I was at there, too. And this is in County Donegal in the far northwest. Then I discovered a couple of Irish painters that I hadn't heard of before. Derek Hill was one, and we visited his studio in County Donegal, and had great stories about him. They had a wonderful docent that gave us a tour of the house, and it's sort of preserved like Cezanne's house in Aix-en-Provence. It's just like it was when he was painting there. But there's this sort of apocryphal story where he went to this island, I think it was called the Torrey Island, off of northwest Ireland, and this old man came up to him and said, "You know, I can paint better than that." And so Derek Hill took him under his wing, and he fostered him as a painter. And I think they had exchange programs between Philadelphia and Ireland for these painters of the Irish coast and heartland.
And you clearly have a fondness for James Joyce.
Yes, that was another interesting aspect of it, too. I've been reading about Joyce through his interpreters, and they're very enjoyable. There's this one book that I'm reading now by Declan Kibbard is his name. He's a scholar from Dublin, but he really unpacks the whole novel. The novel is very dense and difficult to read, and so it takes scholars to kind of unpack it for us. But it's a fascinating story. And so to be in Dublin while I was painting along the Liffey, these gulls started coming in, and they were getting really close to my painting. And there's a couple of incidences in Ulysses where Joyce is throwing bread up to the birds and trying to fool them with paper. He's throwing paper up to them, and the gulls weren't fooled by it. But part of the thing is he imagines himself as a gull. That's part of the thing with Ulysses, his empathy with other people and other animals. At a certain time, he pretends he's a cat and, you know, wonder what the world looks like through a cat. And then there's this other incident. We were coming across the O'Connell Bridge. It's right in central Dublin. And we encountered this blind man, and there was a central part of the story in Ulysses where he encounters this, he calls him a blind stripling, and so he kind of enters into what it would be like to be blind and how the other senses kind of become augmented because of being blind. You might hear better or feel better, or the other senses become somehow increased. And so that happened, and there were several other incidences like that. So that was a fun aspect of it, too.
And a portrait came out.
Yes. I was sort of following Joyce's footsteps, and the novel Ulysses starts at this place called the Martello Tower, and it's on the Dublin Bay there. And so I went out there, and it was a beautiful day, but it was just kind of flat, and the tide was out, and I didn't really see anything that seemed compelling. But this elderly woman saw me carrying my easel and art supplies, and so she struck up a conversation with me. So I ended up talking with her for several hours, a couple hours there that morning. And I think she was a homeless woman, but she just had a great personality. Everybody kind of knew her there. She was like the matron or the maven of the Martello Tower. And so it's just like, I know I had to paint this person because she had such an engaging personality. She was a gentle soul. And she knew all about Derek Hill, too. And she knew all these stories. And she said, "No, you don't have it right." She had to correct me on a few things. And I just finished that portrait recently. And she fits into a type of a portrait called a trony. I think it's a Dutch word that they use to describe when Rembrandt would be painting somebody like an elderly person, like he painted his mother and father when they're very elderly. It's sort of like a type or an archetype of a person. And there's also another famous one by Giorgione, and it has this inscription. It's a painting of an elderly woman, and the inscription says something like, "In time, you will be like me too." So it's kind of like a visual essay on the fragility of life and the impermanence of life, and that we're all mortal and we may be young at a certain time and think that it's going to go on forever, but we're all only here for a very short time, sort of the message of these types of portraits.
And you also have, I would think, meditations on time in that you do capture the sun at certain points or the evening, and we think about the passage of time as the globe turns, but also there is that superstructure of the rocks and the cliff so forth. So you have the passing of time, but you also have that sense of deep time as well in what you do.
Exactly, yeah. I guess I hadn't thought of that, but that's certainly true. places all along the coast there, these craggy coastlines with cliffs of Moher and other places. There's another dramatic cliff called Glen Sleeve. It's up in the north, and they're just incredible. I think they're the highest cliffs in Europe. I don't know what the height is, but they are very dramatic, and so we painted it at both places. So that's an interesting corollary there, too, of the sort of less changing less fast of those places like that, and the Burren and the Aran Islands, too. You know, they've been there for millions and millions of years, and so the change is slower there for these types of geological things.
When you immerse yourself in a landscape like Ireland in this particular trip, what did you learn from your particular interaction with the landscape, not just the painters and the authors, but what did you learn this time from just being there and seeing and smelling and feeling and hearing and all of that?
Yeah, I think part of it is opening myself to other kinds of lighting conditions. I kind of favor the golden hour, and I love to paint that type of lighting, sunlight, just like on the drive down here today. It was a beautiful sunny day, and it's just a natural inclination. But in Ireland, it's known for its mist and rain, so I painted no matter what the weather was. Even if it was windy, I would put myself in our rental car with the door propped open. And so discovering the nuances of grayness, the beauty of a limited palette, is one of the things, and I painted out there in the rain, and the mist is incredibly penetrating. Like when it's rain, you can just cover yourself with an umbrella, but the mist kind of comes at you from everywhere. So you really have to go out with the rainproof pants and stuff, which I didn't have. So that was so one of the things there is just opening up to other lighting conditions.
People might not know, but you are a musician, and so when you do talk and use musical analogies with regard to things visual, it's based in your understanding of music from the inside because you make music as well.
We did avail ourselves of the music there, too. They have a wonderful, what they call a trad music, traditional music in the pubs. And we were there on a bank holiday in this one town about the size of Wailusing had three pubs with just incredible music. It was very informal, too. You know, they would just kind of be sitting around, and we could sit next to them, and they played this waltz, and I asked the fiddle player, well, do you know the name of that? He said, you know, I don't know the name of it, but I know the history because we believe it to be over 1,000 years old because it went to Iceland or Greenland, and it was lost in Ireland, and then it came back sometime recently, so they could somehow figure out that, you know, it was 1,000 years old. So that was fun, and we danced in a couple of these pubs, did our swing dancing Balboa, and this one old timer came up to me and said, that was the best thing I've ever seen, that you just made my night. And I saw him the next day in the pub, and he was telling people, yeah, this is the guy that was dancing there. So that was a big thrill too.
So tell us what we'll see when we come to Laura Craig.
There's a collection of a lot of plein air, maybe a dozen or 14 plein airs from both Ireland and Maine, and then there's some from the Finger Lakes too. The gallery is open by appointment only, so you'd have to call her or email her, but it'll be up till the end of January.
Are you going to be there for an opening?
There's going to be a kind of a holiday party on the 28th, Friday night, from 5 to 8.
Can we come and see you?
Yes, I'd love to have you.
You bring us these beautiful images, and I use the word deliberately, beautiful images of the landscape wherever you are. Mm-hmm. In your way of viewing life and living, where does beauty fit like this? What does this do for us as humans?
Yeah, that's a good question. I like to think of it as sort of being life-affirming and sort of a positive ode to the hectic and troublesome nature that we're confronted with, and so many aspects of life is challenging. So maybe this is sort of a refuge in a way to contemplate the sort of the more universal aspects of nature and life, and to offer sort of a message of altruism or hope.
Artist Brian Keeler of Wailusing and Ithaca speaking with us about the show Atlantic Arias, new work from Ireland and Maine, opening tomorrow and running into January 2019 at the Laura Craig Galleries, 307 Linden Street in Scranton. For more information online, Brian Keeler brianketeler.com, brianketeler.com. You can preview the works that are part of that exhibition at brianketeler.com. And he also directs us to another website, northstarartgallery.com, and that's his gallery in Ithaca, and he says that's where you can find his blog and much more. Northstarartgallery.com. It's Brian Keeler, Atlantic Arias, new work from Ireland and Maine, opening tomorrow, and that will run through into January 2019 at the Laura Craig Galleries, 307 Linden Street in Scranton. And if you'd like to see it by appointment, lcraiggalleries@gmail.com, lcraiggalleries@gmail.com.